So this period of time is a period for inquiry, and as previously a couple of evenings ago, I'll take the time to give a brief outline of the time, and of course with the inquiry, give some opportunity for some exploration of the Dharma, and there is the invitation for anyone who wishes to come and take the seat, and it may be emerging from your experiences, your interests, areas of concern over the days here. Of course, tomorrow in the morning, teachers will speak to you a little bit about the transitions into the daily life. So if the themes of the inquiry could be very much in that general way, be associated with the here and now, meditations and reflections, areas of concern, in the immediacy, talks, guided meditations, and so forth. The intention behind the inquiry, of course, is that it contributes to insight and understanding for everybody without exception. The other evening, in terms of the agenda, it was three men and one woman, so this evening it will be five women. I think it's called punishment. No, I'm joking. But at least we'll ensure to keep the balance this evening. And the first two kindly be women to come, that'd be appreciated. Remember as well, of course, that in the listening itself, the act of listening is rather important. And listening with that full mindfulness to two people who are communicating, sometimes on difficult issues, of course, sometimes it's exploration of precious and lovely ones as well, and also noticing in the act of listening what the inner listening is about. So what might be being revealed to you as you listen, in other words, any thoughts arising, any kind of responses, and to really take notice of that as well. For those who come to speak and take the seat here, it's not always so easy, and it is helpful, rather than talking about what it's like sitting up here, which is in fact is often a secondary matter, what the actual issue is would be better. And in that, in the communication, at any time, the person or myself can say thank you to bring it to a close. And for the one who's returning to the seat, again, the immediate flow on afterwards is equally important. What are the responses going on inside of oneself in terms of the exchange? As their voices on benefit and insight and understanding, is one reacting to the dialogue? Is one forming views and opinions about oneself in all of that? And that can happen in the immediate period after the inquiry. But remembering that the primary interest is some insight, inspiration, shedding light on the situations. So finally, two points. One, of course, that the retreat of people who have been generally around 2 to 3 weeks on retreat, and who are also here in the hall this evening, welcome to come, and if you wish, and to speak as well. And in the communications that take place, in the last retreat, I believe it was recorded there, and if it is recorded, we did forget to mention to you that if you do not wish it to be recorded, those of you who came, then please let the good managers know, and it will be deleted. With the usual health warning, if it's recorded and you're okay with it, it can go anywhere. Your mother might order a copy. So it could land on the website, it could go anywhere. So if you feel okay about that, and so does your mother, then that's fine. But if not, just let us know. So that's basically the thread. I'll just see if this good recorder of mine is working. And if anyone of the gender mentioned would like to come and take a seat, you're very, very welcome. Yeah, if you take a seat here. If you just give me a moment, and maybe I'll get this thing to... I forgot to set it before I came. I've got plenty of light. The light's no problem. It's just so I set it. They don't bite. Breathe. Breathe. I can't be bothered to fiddle with it. So we use the recording that's... firstly, are you okay with the recording or you prefer it to be off?
I prefer to be...
I have two questions which are connected and they are very short.
Sure, please.
The first one, I've noticed that when I meditate...
Can you hear okay at the back?
Can you hear me in the back? when I meditate, there is a voice inside of me that knows that once I'm united with the whole, there are brief seconds when I feel united with everything and there is no thought, and there is an entity inside of me that knows that this is what's waiting for it. And whenever I feel close to getting to this point, it says, I don't want to. Don't concentrate on whatever it is, the breathing, the walking. A brief second before I'm there, I feel an enormous itnagdut, resistance, and I cannot get there. So I give up. I let it be, but it's very strong, and I'm not so patient.
Do you think? In this, that there's the process of the meditation taking place and one settling into the flow and rhythm, and then, understandably of course, there is the idea of a there to get to. And with that idea of a there to get to, there can then emerge some resistance, and part of the reason for that is the idea of there is the there. What's your response?
That you're right. What do you suggest?
You're too kind.
Believe me, I'm not.
So what would be, if that one sees that well and clearly, what would be the approach to meditation?
Well, I can guess what you expect me to say, that I should not...
I bet you can't. You only can guess.
Maybe
you
I can
guess.
That I shouldn't refer to it as getting there. That it is already... is present. I just have to reveal it.
You guessed wrong.
Okay.
So sometimes you say, the there makes the gap, it makes the distance, and sometimes I feel I get there, or I get very close, like you said. Then something happens and that stops it. The meditation, the concentration, the mindfulness, the interest, old habits, whatever. So then the view arises, if I let go of there, I have no there to get to, then in doing that, then that there will be here. It will just be here and now. Would that be ultimately satisfying?
Yes, for now.
The phone now makes it unsatisfying.
I mean that in my next walking or sitting meditation, I will try it and I'll get back to you.
I'll be gone. All right. So sometimes there are whole practices and, in fact, traditions. And some of those traditions mention getting there. The goal, the end of the path, the practice, the deep, or whatever, getting there. And other traditions might make a lot of mention that there is no there to get to, because of all, like what you described, and it's important to recognize the problems of getting there. But then, in the dropping of the there, then the now, or the here and now, becomes extremely important. And consciousness with no there just rests, so to speak, in the now, and that might feel for now comfortable, but would just resting in the now with no there be a completely fulfilling life?
What do you mean fulfilling life?
Liberated.
Sorry, can you repeat the question? I didn't understand.
All right. So we drop the there because of some of the issues and difficulties there. Distance and gap, getting close, not getting close, it being disturbed and interrupted, stopping me from getting there. Sometimes there is the memory of this. Oh, I really feel like once I was there, I had this incredible experience, and now I want to get back there again. And we see lots of problems for the human being in this kind of relationship to the there. So we drop the there, and then we say, okay, there is only the now. And there are plenty of rather poor books on just being in the now. And then we are told that this is it, to be satisfied with this. And my question is just being in the now the complete fulfillment for a human being?
Well, my consciousness says boring, boring, boring.
Boring. You're all boring, she just said.
Not you.
No, of course, I'm teasing you. All right. All right. So, if we were just kind of in the now all the time, it might get boring.
That's what it
Yeah, it feels, yeah, fine. It could feel rather restricted and narrow, having to be in the now. And then when our mind is not in the now, then we can react against that. Or we try to persuade ourselves, oh, all of my thoughts are in the now as well. That gives some little comfort, I suppose. So what are we going to do? The now is not completely fulfilling. The there seems at a distance. Now what you're going to do?
Seems like there is no hope.
That's
I'm
true.
Kidding. I'm
not. There's no hope. So hope we'll leave with Mr. Obama. And we'll come back to you. The Buddha said on this point, which is discussed at depth, neither here nor there. Now what?
Just be.
Oh. Dear, oh dear.
No, it sounds funny, but I didn't mean it.
It is funny.
All right. Just to let go and see what comes, what follows. That's what I meant.
All right. You've read too many books. I'm teasing. So
it's true.
Not too many, but many. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So rather than the quick response, because of those answers, it needs to be deeper. If human beings are in the grip either, or in this case, the spiritual one, of trying to be there, and everything that you described, and I share the same concerns, or trying to be just here, and one has concerns about that as well, and therefore not making being here, being now as the priority, nor making there, what then, inwardly, are you left with?
I'm open to suggestions. I have no idea.
Just to approach from another slightly different avenue. The general agreement about what it is to be in the now would be in touch and in contact with what we see, hear, smell, taste and touch. General, this is, I'm right now. And there is a usefulness and value of that, and the teachers, we have spoken about it regularly. But we hesitate that we should draw the conclusion about just being or just being in the now. Right? There. So if we're not going to make that some absolute status, which some teachings do give to that, we're not going to put all the attention into that there, then perhaps something else we need to be receptive to, because we're not having a conclusion. Being in the now, the power of now, the here and now, is it. We're not just not going to say that. So that might leave us open to something. What's your response?
I have none right now.
No response. Do you want to say thank you, or do you want to stay with the silence inwardly a little bit and see if there is any response?
So what you suggest, just that I be sure that I understood you.
Go on, yeah.
In the sense of being now, I should relate to what I see, hear, taste, and etc.
Yes, that's the usual sense for us, isn't it? When we're in the moment or we're in the now, then we're connected. It's precious and lovely with seeing and hearing, smelling, tasting, touching.
Okay.
There, but we're concerned about overemphasizing it, as though that is the goal or the end in some way or other, just to be now. Therefore, if we're not saying that, what can we be receptive and open to?
If we don't emphasize it, you say?
Mm-hmm. Don't exaggerate it.
Being in the now,
mm-hmm.
putting my mind into it on alone.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not emphasizing it, you say, what else should I be doing while I'm giving it some attention? That's what you say.
What can I not doing in this case? But what can I be receptive to?
To thoughts, to feelings, to inner stuff that comes, I think.
It would be a start.
To whatever there is, that's what you mean? To whatever is?
Looking deeper than that.
You're looking deeper than that?
Uh-huh.
Well, I can't see deeper than that right now.
All right. Okay.
You have to help me here.
We'll just leave it on the small point that I just made. One is, there is a genuine value about being in the present. For some, there is a genuine value about having a path and direction. We have to see which is helpful and valuable for us with our experience. If, for some, the priority might be being here and now, as an example. Yes, the connection with the world of the senses what we see, hear, smell, taste and touch is valuable. Gives a sense of relaxation. Less stress about the past and future. A bit more harmony with the world around. And there's much to be said for that. And sometimes a lovely sense of oneness in the here and now. All to be grateful for and to be genuinely appreciated. But what's being said right now is that not to regard that as the ultimate purpose or discovery that's available to us. It's a valuable contribution. Therefore, the final point in a way that I was endeavouring to make is if we find a comfortable relationship with the now, there, what else can we be receptive to? And I'll leave that question with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a quiet minute and then another invitation. Yes, anyone want to tell me?
I would like to share. I would like to share and inquire. I think the subject is actually about right silence and creating inner peace.
My heart is like out there.
Yes.
Maybe I'll start with a story that just happened and gave me the idea actually for what I want to share. I went after dinner to do my work duty in the kitchen, and it was very important to me to get on time because yesterday I was supposed to do it and I fell asleep and I didn't come to dinner, and I woke up at about 8:30 and I felt really bad. And so today I was like, the whole day I have to do it. And so I came and I ate first and I went to the kitchen and I started doing washing the dishes. And I was alone in the kitchen and enjoying it, and there was a song coming from my heart, and I was singing and being kind of happy. Actually, I was very confused, but the singing kind of helped to bring happiness. And then there was more movement going on in the kitchen. In my mind, I knew that when it gets too full, I will stop singing. But then some whistling came, and I was whistling. And I guess I was a little bit too loud, because then one of the dearest people in the kitchen that been feeding me here, which also gave me now this story to tell, told me that came and said, when the other yogis come, so please be silent. And in like 1 second, everything dropped. I shut my mouth. My ego was like, ah! I felt this aggression inside me, and I was like, what? Why can't I sing? And
what do you think? I didn't know that I need to be quiet when everybody is coming, and I'm not in silence anymore, and this is the kitchen, and I can sing and dance and do whatever I want. But I felt hurt, and I saw this anger coming and aggression, and I was still busy with the dishes, and I was getting like really mad on the dishes. And then I was even like trying to get back to singing, and it was gone. It wasn't there anymore. And I realized that this issue of silence, of this feeling of being silenced, is something that is, I know it very well. Suddenly, like bosses came into my mind, and all kinds of moments in my life that I felt that somebody is putting their power over me, being my boss, and trying to make me be silent. And I really, really, really hate that feeling. And it makes me feel sad and angry and all sorts of lovely emotions, which after they are coming back to me, because I won't dare to take it out on anybody else, so I take it out on myself. And it's actually, I know and feel and felt it very well in this retreat, which I've been here 20 days, and I feel like kind of a hero for doing so. That it's all related to this story I have in my past of sexual exploitation from my childhood. And this is keep coming back in all sorts of ways and forms and emotions, and taking me to spins in hell, I might call it. And I went through it again and again and again and again and again through these days here. And I thought I was going crazy, that I will have to be put in an institution somewhere. I was crying, I was feeling mad, I was feeling very, it's not mad, it's like more like rage, like I could kill someone. And I think that the best insight that I have about this issue, which is not spoken of ever in my feeling, that that is the problem, that it is not spoken of, and that it's silenced, and that it is a subject that shouldn't be silenced, because it shouldn't be so hard to say, hey, I have this story, and it's been haunting me my whole life, and I'm feeling that I am to blame for something, and that I did something wrong, and that I am not as worthy as anybody else, that I'm damaged in some way, and it keeps affecting every step, every stage in my life in a different way. I won't go into all the details, because it really doesn't matter, because what matters for me is this realization that I had in this retreat, that my voice, my verbal ability is something which is a quality that I have, And not being able to speak about something, it's like really, really damaging my me. And that it comes so powerful every time, it like gets stronger, because it's not my story. And it's not only my sadness and my grief and my hatred and my aggression. It's it comes from everybody, everywhere I go, and it's so powerful that I really feel that it's trying to tell me something. So this is what I realize, that I just need to maybe say it and release this like thing that is it's choking me here and here, and sitting on my shoulders and in my heart, making a big shadow. And I think that this is really what I need to say, that it happened, and maybe even it didn't happen. It's a story, I don't know. It's been many years ago, but it's happening every day, all the time, for women and children and babies and boys and girls. And it's not, we're not speaking about it. We don't want to deal with it. We don't want to see it, because it's not our beautiful side. But if we don't talk about it, so we can't change it.
Sorry.
Yes, please.
Firstly, really, huge thank you. In fact, on behalf of all of us. For your willingness to come and to take the seat, to speak so openly and clearly, and to remind us all of these vulnerabilities of the kinds of abuse that can take place in the past, the violence and the sexual abuse. And how the small incident, seemingly small incident, in the present moment, can touch those painful and very raw areas in our history, in our past. And as you said, the happiness of the singing and the whistling and being in the hall, the dining hall, and the preparation, and one of the staff or teachers, whoever, comes to you with the request, then fairly normal, everyday kind of request that we all make from both in the hall and from time to time with each other, and just with the period of time that you've been here and all the receptivities and inner work that you've been so strongly committed to, that just a few words, though the few words are just a few words, but it's representational. It touches something and passes through the conscious life, so to speak, and in that, the experience of that reminds one of a very painful early history, which you summarized as being silenced. Mm-hmm. And that being silenced does mean, as you point out, that both in the past and in the present, so much goes unsaid, because one has been silenced in the past. And it makes people nervous and fearful of breaking that kind of code of silence that goes on with history, personal history, and of course that freezes us up in a way. And it's genuinely an act of courage and insight to particularly in the immediacy, in which you might have just shared this with one teacher, that itself would be something. you might have shared it with one of our small groups even there, but to actually come and sit here and speak to us so openly and honestly, I think it's a genuine treasure of a statement from you, because hopefully it will give others as well the confidence to express openly events of the past, to break these walls of silence, because we've been silenced in the past, and it's time to change that there. And anything you would like to add or say further?
I said in the beginning that I'm searching or trying to strengthen my inner peace.
Yes.
And I don't believe that just saying this now will do the trick, like hocus pocus, and then I will be in peace. I have some inner peace, thank God, but I want it to be more stable, and I am wondering how to do so when the very strong emotions arise, mm-hmm. and I'm not able to function, mm-hmm. and they just like take me, mm-hmm. and I'm spinning, and I can see that I'm spinning, and I can see that the stories are starting to come, and I can be aware of what's happening, but like I cannot do anything about it, and it's really hard and not comfortable, mm-hmm. and I would like to be wiser and more skillful in using it.
Firstly, just for me, just to go back to the earlier point, that what you just said then, that it's hard to know in the short or long term what the deep benefits are of breaking through the walls of silence and sharing. That actual expression of that from you will definitely, in my view, mind, will bring real benefits in the future there. There may be periods of time when, as you point out, you may experience some waves, and quite strong waves, maybe, because we don't know, but of emotion which may arise there. A little bit of knowing ourselves with regard to this is what kind of situations that is possible, what kind of environments. This is one of them. So as you described to us over the days with all the difficulties and struggles, but those difficulties and struggles, this is an environment for that, with voices around, teachers, small groups, inquiry, which give the authority from the inner to the voice to express itself there. In other situations, elsewhere, that will, though we cannot prepare ourselves fully, but you may know in certain situations where there could be the provocation
that arises.
Mm. And that might be certain places, certain times of the day, certain people and circumstances. It may be in the knowing of yourself. Is a lot on the mind. If there's a lot on the mind, there'll be a forgetfulness of the power of the emotional life. If there is a lot of tiredness or stress, there's more vulnerability to the reactivity. So you have to know yourself and have to know the environment in which you are in. Those two would be critical. Even knowing yourself and knowing the environment there still cannot guarantee the volatile there. If you can find some outlets, like shouting at trees, because they don't mind, really. At least they tell us they don't mind. Sometimes just needs an outlet, which is a non-human outlet, for the simple reason you know that you have suffered under anger. And therefore, if your anger explodes on the other, she or he or they will also suffer. So, the protection for the other, unless the other is extremely steady with anger, and most people are not, then some other outlet really will be necessary, because obviously you don't want to send out and endure for others to have to endure.
Yes.
And that's where the kindness and the care for the other, which, as I say, may mean that when there is some pressure going on inside and you're feeling tense and agitated, some kind of sitting won't help with this, by the way. It will need it, because it will build the pressure.
Good.
Some others don't. and therefore it will need much more movement. Anything from walking to dancing, to an open space of yelling, just to let things move through freely, and knowing that in the doing of that, you're not dumping on another. And that would be a great, obviously, a great act of compassion there. And if the situation is too tense, and you feel the emotion is too strong, and it might explode out, then you will have to quietly and quickly, if you can, remove yourself from the situation with all due apologies. Out of the protection.
What did you mean?
Let's say you're in a situation, and there's a person in front of you, and she or he or they are really pressing your buttons. Even if they may not intend to. Such as the example today.
Yes.
So the person just says something, and perhaps you feel silenced, or cut off, or reduced in some way, whatever it might be, and though it may not be the in-person's intention, or it may be, boom, it's there quickly for you. If it is, politely, quickly, go. Before you're breathing fire on the other.
Usually, I think the problem is that I'm not breathing fire on anyone besides myself or in myself.
All right.
And
good.
So.
Then, if the knowing of yourself, it generally doesn't go towards the other, there, then, and it's going on oneself. Then that's an abuse of yourself. It's still abuse.
Yes.
But it's turned this direction and not that direction. And therefore there is a duty and a responsibility to work with the abuse that we inflict upon ourselves.
Yes.
There. And then again, all the practices and all the things that I just said still stand.
Mm-hmm.
The voice, the language, the movement, the activities, the outdoors, whatever it may require, so that one really feels one's not locking down but releasing. And sometimes some forms of dynamic releasing incredibly healthy and helpful, so that you've broken the walls of holding back. It's a real practice. It's a real practice.
I just want to say for a conclusion that I think that one of the things that I noticed during these days is that the effects of such an experience is very deep and very harming, and if you don't treat it, like talk about it or do something with it, so it's really it's like a snowball just getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Very, very, very important. And I think in our societies there is very slowly more recognition of this, and that more adults are willing to come forward, and as you have done this evening, and just to express this in few words but very powerful ones, the history of sexual violence, sexual abuse and violence, which has been put upon children and young people, and as well as adults as well. And that voice towards the change is the real start of really making a difference. And the Buddha commented on this a number of times and said that if these issues are not resolved, there is the real danger that the abused becomes the abuser. And that abuse maybe go towards another. And over the years, I've had a number of people, in this case men, and who are pedophiles, who have come on retreats. They have shared with me the situations of where they have engaged in the sexual abuse and touching of children, and realizing the terrible harm that's caused, the silence also that's gone with it. And as the Buddha said, if these issues, as you're reminding us, are not addressed there is the real danger that the abused becomes the abuser. And in the situations where I've had these the dialogues and the one-to-ones meetings, and then I've asked about their childhood history, and so far all have been abused, and some pattern as there. So it takes some real inner work not to repeat the history in any way upon others. It's a huge task as well to not to also be aggressive towards oneself there, and to find ways and means with clear mind, open heart and communication, as you're doing, to really work through this. And sometimes once the door is open, once the communication really starts, the process of healing from the past sometimes can get underway incredibly quickly. It doesn't have to be a long process. Once the door is open for change and exploration, and it might well be, Naomi, that you come on a retreat, we hope you do, a few weeks, a few months, and you're in one of your lovely singing hearts and whistling like the birds in the kitchen, and the manager comes, walks over to you and says, would you mind keeping the silence, because the masses are going to descend here. You say, yes, of course, wonderful, no problem. Then you'll know you've moved on.
Sounds good.
It is good, it's the best.
Okay.
Thank you. Precious. Thank you. Very important. Precious. Beautiful. Yeah. Yes, anyone please, any gender?
First of all, I would like to say that you said, I don't see you now, but that your heart was there, and I think all of our hearts were here. So, thank you.
Nice.
So, I hold a lot of views, opinions, and beliefs, mm-hmm. ideology. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, most cases, they disturb me from equanimity. Mm-hmm. For example, gender is one of them, mm-hmm. But not necessarily. And the fact that I'm not in equanimity creates overdoing and thinking a lot of about results.
Mm. And the question, good statement.
And I can't. It seems like it's hard for me to be in the process or to be flexible and relaxed with things that I do. I am very focused on results and on getting there, and creating a change. And I know I'm always being like it's. It's a challenge. It's a challenge for many years, mm-hmm. and I don't know how to dissolve it or how to work with it.
When sometimes when the self emerges and the habit, the push of consciousness is towards the result, to the end, to the achievement of what I want to get to there. Maybe for oneself or for others, there is some genuine satisfaction with that. Of course, if one doesn't reach that which I want to get to, then there's dissatisfaction. And rather much of the life can therefore be a movement between the dualities of results which give satisfaction and the results which don't, and the results which one is unsure about there. What way does the, you mentioned something like the beliefs and the ideologies and much else, what way does all of that influence you? And what, and I'm curious, of course, what kind of beliefs and ideologies and standpoints, what ones, name one, if you wish, one or two, or two or three that you carry around with you.
Equality.
Quality.
Equality.
Equality.
Equality. Like gender, Jews and Arabs, Palestinians, and, you know.
Yeah, equality. Mm. And
when I see the inequality,
Inequality.
It makes me frustrated and angry, and especially gender issues. For example, the other inquiry.
Yes.
I've noticed that three men have arrived, even though we are 2/3 women, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And it made me angry. And here, it's a safe environment, and you mentioned it before, and I was like, okay. He noticed, but in other places, it's hard for me to be in the world. I feel small, and that nothing that I will be able to do would change it.
We'll see. it, both here in Israel and elsewhere, for the sake of, in this case, equality of view. Sometimes on the first evening, the gallop up to the front is by the women, and the poor men feel left behind. So, It goes both ways. So just to be fair.
It's an example.
But it's an example.
And it usually happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really small. And
no. This is, but, you know, it's the God of small things. In the small incident, a larger truth can emerge from it. And right, hear your good voice on this. And of course, there's issues of gender issues and, of course, with identities as well. The labels of Israeli, Palestinian, Jewish, Muslim, or whatever it may be. All of that takes place. We'd like to say a few more words. I'm not quite convinced about the love of equality. So we'd like to say a few words about what equality means for you. I know it's amongst plenty of very thoughtful and caring people, it is an important consideration. But I'd like to hear from you. What does equality mean for you? And is there a relationship between getting angry and inequality?
So equality for me is expression of justice.
An expression of justice.
Of what needs to be right.
Mm-hmm.
Of kindness.
Yeah. So, I'm fully on board with you, of course. So where there is justice, there, and kindness, and of course, it's to a credit of some of our thoughtful institutions, and of course, women have particularly made an enormous contribution to reducing this social divide. There with all the privileges of what was and still is to quite a degree patriarchal society, and those large gaps, they're still there, but they're getting smaller, and that's reflected in more and more of our institutions and more respect for gender and gender differences, gender in common, in a whole variety of ways. That really is a really healthy movement which is taking place. Would you have any concerns with regard to the ideal or the value of equality? Do you see anything in it which might bring some concern?
I didn't understand.
Sometimes we say, it is really problematic in our society, this inequality. The rich and the poor, the haves and the have-nots, the oppressor and the oppressed. Those with the benefits and those without. Many aspects which reflect the terrible inequalities in our world and the injustices which go with the inequalities. And it really needs to be a real concern. And women and men, thoughtful people, work hard to redress all of these imbalances which do have a long human history to them. But coming back to the question, though there is genuine appreciation for the, shall we say, ideal of equality, could the ideal of equality have real limitations to it? And if so, what are they? It's an open question, but slightly loaded.
So if I understood you right,
mm-hmm.
correctly, you're asking if there are limits to the ideal of equality, meaning will justice be made if equality is reached, for example?
very it could be an example, not quite what I had in mind, just from your own experience rather than the larger picture for a moment. So still bearing with the same question, is equality a real ideal for human beings to strive and work for? Should that really be a real priority?
Not necessarily.
All right then, because?
Because it's not the only problem.
Not the only problem, all right, okay. You're not saying anything to please me. Eh? Surely a good feminist wouldn't want to do that.
Because okay. It won't necessarily create liberation and happiness and...
Why is it that it doesn't? We've had these experimental societies, if not countries.
But I think the issue is not specific. I'm sorry that
you
I'm
yeah,
sorry.
You carry on.
It's not specifically equality or inequality. Mm-hmm. It's about wanting to create a change and being in the world and working and having
yes.
targets, yet doing it with flexibility and happiness and openness.
All right. So some of the change, because sometimes in the ideal and sometimes in the investment in the ideal, that can happen, and in this case equality, and we don't see it, and then a lot of anger and rage and aggression can come. What happens when we have the ideal, in this case equality, or peace, or anything else, and then we're faced with inequality and violence, and we have this ideal, and then we get very, very angry. What does that show?
That we're not getting to the result.
In your case, yeah. What does it show with regard to the ideal of equality? If one's getting angry with the inequality.
Maybe we don't have the ability to change it.
We do. We're human. We can do anything. We can change anything. We're human. We do have that capacity. So...
So if I'm angry when I'm working towards a goal and it doesn't work, and I get angry because of it, I guess I'm not doing it in the good way. Or I'm just not getting you.
No, clearly. We'll go back. You have to dig a little more. I have we're taking equality. Because that was the one, and we'll keep with that. And keeping with your good theme of, let's say, equality is a result which I aspire to. And there's a significant value there. The movement of the equality towards, the movement to find the equality there with the other or the others, and then it doesn't happen. And sometimes, out of that, genuinely, does come some anger. Where does inequality come from?
Separation.
Anger. Now what? Sometimes the equalitists, if we can call them, that's a new word, and the peace activists, and sometimes the environmentalists, get so angry about the violence on the earth, the violence in relationships, the violence of governments, and quite forgetting that the violence is what makes the inequality. Those with the ideal of equality, some, are actually contributing more to inequality than to its resolution. Now what? You can't have inequality without violence. If you're looking at me, I promise you, you're looking in the wrong direction. Close the eyes. The only direction is the...
I feel that emotions help motivating.
Yeah, me too.
So sadness and happiness motivates.
Yes, can do, yes.
I understand that anger doesn't help in that direction. So I guess there is still work and thought.
Right. So you need the love and passion, as you say, the emotion is powerful. It's a great agent when wisely used for real change. We need passion. We need conviction. We need the sense of our inner authority. And just this evening, Sandy was speaking to me about a film just saw, actually about a British parliamentarian in the 1830s who rather single-handedly campaigned and campaigned to end the obscenity of the slave trade which the British colonialists introduced, and all the horrendous consequences there. And therefore sometimes the single voice with passion and with conviction and with knowledge just works and works and works and works for change and may or may not see any results in their lifetime. What's your response? May or may not see any results. What does that say about your interest in results?
That I need to have patience. I'm like a lost case.
No, never. Patience is too polite. What does it say about your relationship to results? If there are men and women on this earth with passion and conviction and so dedicated towards change that the results is not their priority, what does it say for you?
It shows dedication and it shows real connection to what they and I am aiming for.
All right. Okay. So if we're not so concerned with results because we don't have to rely upon them, and sometimes some of us have a more long-term vision which runs far beyond our lifetime. It might run into our children's lifetime or our grandchildren's and before, so results are not even worthwhile introducing. So your passion, as you said, the good use of emotion as a driving force is terrific, and the happiness that goes with it, and keeping clearly in mind that anger always works against the best interest of our species. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Have a quiet minute and then I'll just give a short reflection. Is because I'm asking what the first topic was, because it's like a lifetime ago. Okay, thank you. you're as bad as me. Sorry, it's just two teachers. So in the first theme really, the exploration and looking at ourselves, and as the good person speaking to us, that sometimes in the kind of spiritual language here, the metaphorical language of the path and the way and to the goal, some people, that metaphor, which has been widely used, of course, widely used by the Buddha and others, is really, really helpful as a kind of conceptual framework in which to practice. So the path and the way in its traditional formulation would give consideration to wisdom and understanding, and to ethics and meditation and mindfulness, and wisdom, compassion, love, and all of that, as it were, and much else, helps to constitute the way one really feels committed to this, feels how valuable it is for all beings. But for others, the language of a path or a way, and particularly a goal, is awkward inwardly. The metaphor doesn't work very well. And sometimes with that, there's too much comparing and measuring going on in the mind. So if someone feeling, am I going forwards, am I going backwards, am I really on the path, have I fallen off the path? And those views can go backwards and forwards. So for some, it feels more at ease and more open in a kind of way, in which rather than using that language, then using the language of seeing what's unfolding. But as I expressed two or three times, taking care with the idea of it's just about being in the now. To me, it feels rather limited and restricted. It feels a certain kind of imprisonment could be just being in the now is that all that matters. And I think there is some real loss of real opportunity for a large exploration, which includes the here and now, but it includes much more. And that's where human consciousness and the being can be receptive to much more, which is not just about seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting. It is, as the person pointed out, about the movements and expressions of the inner life, but even consciousness itself can feel and sense and be touched by much more than what we normally are. And there's a huge wealth of receptivities that we can have access to when we're not enchanted, shall we say, or too much caught up in the now. It has a place. My goodness me, we emphasize it enough here. Be present, be conscious, be mindful, feel the earth, feel the experiences. But we say we're not making it an end in itself. It's a terrific contribution, but it's not an end. In the second inquiry, as we listen to, that the small event, the tiny situation, in the moment of just a few words, due to the receptivity, and this case the weeks of practice, I'm sure contributed to all of this, that one small event, whether, you know, probably quite unintended by the other, just giving out a small reminder about the silence, and the person hears it, and it's a powerful reminder of a history of being silenced, and it broke through, so to speak, right into that history there of being silenced. And this being silenced is the real shadow if one holds on to silence, including noble silence, of being silenced. And with that, the voice comes clearly and strongly, and as one person said, our heart reached out, in which, in the voice there, of the willingness to say, I have a history here, and this history includes in it sexual abuse, this history includes in it violence. And this can't be kept silent, because if it's kept silent, it's held in, and I either blame myself or blame other, and one's life is lived in the torment of the history. And to actually share and speak about that, hopefully as well, for others as well, to hear their voice. And when we hear those voices of violence there, and all the inequality that goes with the violence there, that may we have the hearts, as you have done this evening, to really listen, really take care and be sensitive to. And sometimes as well, that sometimes when people are very angry with us, it may be because there has been violent abuse in the past, and we don't know that, and we just hear the anger is coming out, but we don't know what took place in the history that has built up the pressure. And sometimes when people are angry with us, it's not easy, because it's the most difficult thing to a human being to deal with, is somebody else's rage. It really is hard to attend to and deal with. But it might well be that that rage has a very painful childhood history to it. But often we just hear the violence, we just hear the rage. And human beings, we have a lot of exploration to do to really share and open up our early experiences, and particularly if we know or we suspect there that somehow we've been silenced. And quite regularly on retreats, through the silence and through the kindnesses that are taking place from everybody and giving support to everybody, quite often, sometimes there's a very strong childhood or young person's memory just comes through very, very strongly, and suddenly it's out. Suddenly what was suppressed or denied or avoided for a long time, suddenly it's right in consciousness and it's being shared with one of the teachers. And that's part of a real healing process which we need to be very, very respectful to, both in ourselves and with regard to others. And then coming back again to the third inquiry, the visions And relationship to results, expressed once or twice over the days here, to be just be very mindful about this. Because the self, very understandably but very easy, loses its peace of mind through the relationship to results. It can lose it by getting what we want there, and just saying that this is a complete nothing to do, very little to do with the theme, but I do remember something. I was talking about passion and energy there. And some of you may have heard of the Glastonbury Festival. Those of you who haven't joined the grey-haired club will probably may have heard. So it's a huge festival, 185,000. So this year, beloved Mick Jagger, for the first time, was there on stage. There, he's the same age as me. That this is the about 91, I think, and and. So Mick's on, and so I'm at home watching TV because he's on live on TV on BBC and watching Mick. You know, he's still prancing up and down the stage, and thick lips bursting out everywhere and songs. And for an hour and a half, I mean, I have to bow down to his Kundalini energy and etc. He actually went off to Laos and stayed in a Buddhist monastery for a couple of weeks, a couple of years ago, after the breakdown of his 350th relationship. And so he's on stage singing, and this is true. The thought arose in my mind, because I like Mick, I think he's eccentric. And the thought arose in my mind, I wonder what would be the last two songs he will sing, because that's the finale, the last two songs. So, huge TV audience, first time he's been at Glastonbury, 185,000 people watching. What it can live, what's going to be the last two songs? And do you know what the last two songs were? I thought the guy's, he's become a Buddhist. The last two songs were, "You can't always get what you want." And the very last one, it was, "I can't get no satisfaction." I thought, "Mick, you're on." You can come and join the teachers on stage. Wonderful. So if we just take those two one-liners with us for the rest of our life, we'll be fine. You can't always get what you want. Like, and get no satisfaction. Anyway. So sometimes the vision that, and the Buddha used the word vision a lot. It's a key theme. One of the first things he said after his awakening, there was vision. In this case, the vision to establish the Dharma. And sometimes that vision that we have, as was mentioned, just to be aware, if we idealize, we might actually go against the vision. If we idolize something very high, it might generate the very opposite of what the vision actually is. And therefore, with the idealization there, that means the projection and building up, the vulnerability will be burnout or anger. If there's idealization, that means projection and exaggeration, and not staying true to a down-to-earth vision, then at some point there will be a crisis or disappointment or a lot of anger towards others or towards oneself. So the results, let's treat the results rather lightly. Let's keep in line with a vision of life which expresses the great creative use of imagination, work in contact with other human beings, working on our self, and much in Dharma and in teaching, in the political field, environmental field, in the arts, because I think the arts, the best of the arts, are incredibly close to spirituality, that much can be developed there, and that will bring a wealth of insight and benefit for our society and globally. And perhaps through all of those kind of explorations, that destructive human force of anger will go down. And that is what will make a huge change in our earth. Okay, thank you for listening. Thank you.